From WNYC in New York, this is NPR's On the Media. Bob Garfield is away for one more week. I'm Mike Pesca.
And I'm Brooke Gladstone. This week, Time magazine held its nose and declared it would surrender documents with the name of a source to a grand jury investigating a possibly criminal leak. The leakers, who revealed the name of CIA agent Valerie Plame, were senior administration officials. We know that because columnist Bob Novak said so when he outed Plame. We don't know for sure if Novak gave up his source to the grand jury, but we do know who didn't. New York Times reporter Judith Miller and Time magazine reporter Matt Cooper. In an effort to protect their sources, they took their case all the way to the Supreme Court, which this week declined to hear it. That means Miller faces 18 months in jail. Cooper may be spared because of his magazine's 11th hour capitulation.
If Mr. Cooper from Time magazine is forced to reveal a source, you could make an argument that Mr. Cooper's career as a reporter in this town could be over.
That goes for any Washington reporter, said Lucy Dalglish, head of the Reporters Committee for Freedom of the Press, who spoke to us in May of 2004.
You have to remember that the media often operate on leaks, particularly when it comes to national security issues. And I think you could point to countless stories where great public good was done because information was leaked from government agencies. Journalists keep their ethical obligation not to reveal confidential sources. They value it just as much as doctors and lawyers and priests view their obligations to keep information confidential.
Most states have laws that shield reporters from revealing sources in most legal proceedings, but the Plame investigation is a federal case, and there is no national shield law, though most journalists and even a few senators believe there should be. What's worse for Cooper and Miller, this is a criminal case, notoriously shield law resistant. Adam Liptak is the New York Times legal reporter.
Unfortunately for them, they are confronted with just about the worst imaginable facts. They are essentially eyewitnesses to the crime of someone disclosing the identity of a undercover CIA agent, or at least that's the prosecutor's theory.
That's the theory. It's still not clear if the leakers actually broke the law. It is clear that by refusing to cooperate with investigators, Miller and Cooper did. Cooper spoke to us last December.
It would be impossible for journalists to be able to do interviews and, constantly be reassessing, well, can I grant it here? Is this a civil privilege, a criminal case? It's just not the way journalism works.
New York Times publisher Arthur Sulzberger said he was deeply disappointed by Time's decision to release the documents. But Time, Inc. editor-in-chief Norman Perlstein said, quote, "It's more damaging to say we're above the law than it is to follow it." University of Chicago law professor Jeffrey Stone is a champion of First Amendment rights, an ardent supporter of shield laws for journalists. So naturally, he would side with Perlstein?
I think Time has figured out that it exhausted all of its legal remedies and now, like any good citizen, has to abide by the rule of law.
And by extension, the New York Times remains a bad citizen.
Assuming they continue to take the view that they have a right higher than that of the American legal system, yes, I would say they would be behaving as a bad citizen.
And you don't think that the American legal system sometimes is wrong and needs to be backed into a corner in order to get corrected?
I think there are times when the American legal system is wrong. This is just not that case. This is a case where the New York Times made its best shot and lost.
Now, you suggested that Time magazine and the New York Times were actually pursuing the wrong course to begin with.
Exactly. The critical mistake, in my view, that the Times has made and Time magazine up till this point has made is to mistake what is really a source privilege with what they would like to have as a reporter's privilege. When we talk about the attorney-client privilege or the doctor-patient privilege or the reporter-source privilege, the reason for the privilege is not to protect the lawyer or the doctor or the reporter. It's to protect the person who's disclosing the information from the fear that if he makes that disclosure, it will later get him in trouble. And that's the entire reason for the privilege. The distinctive feature about this situation is that the individuals who made the disclosure were committing a criminal offense in doing so. And there's no public policy in protecting their identities. In the doctor-patient privilege, when a patient seeks advice from the doctor not to treat a medical ailment, but in order to commit a fraud on an insurance company, the privilege does not apply. All I'm saying is the exact same thing should apply in the journalist source situation. I believe there should be a very broad journalist source privilege that should cover 99% of the situations. I believe in a much more aggressive privilege than even most people who want a privilege, but I don't believe it covers this particular situation.
I understand the distinction now between a source who is divulging information for criminal reasons and a source who is not. But do you think the vast number of would-be whistleblowers out there will understand this fine distinction when they see an injustice occurring? He might back off because he doesn't think that a promise of confidentiality will ever hold.
Yes, you're right. There will be some people who will be chilled who are not committing crimes because they're not sure. That's absolutely true. On the other hand, there's a legitimate government interest in preventing crimes from being committed. And in this instance, these individuals who are in fact committing crimes are trying to use the press privilege to get away with it.
So where does that leave us? The Plame case, a poor test for reporters' privilege, is a fine way to gauge the gathering storm. Just this week, a federal appeals court ordered four reporters to answer questions about their confidential sources on stories about former nuclear scientist Wen-Ho Lee. Speaking of confidential sources, according to Bob Woodward's new book, Deep Throat's identity could have been known long ago. In 1976, Mark Felt was testifying in a grand jury probe not related to Watergate when he was asked if he had been Deep Throat. Felt denied it. Former Justice Department official Stanley Pottinger reminded him that he was under oath and offered to withdraw the question since it was outside the bounds of the investigation. Flushed, Felt quickly took the offer. Pottinger knew then who Felt was, but never revealed it because, Woodward wrote, he did not think it was appropriate to unmask a reporter's confidential source. The current climate is not so conducive to deep throats who stay in the shadows as reporters hold the powerful to account. Daniel Ellsberg's, maybe. He was willing to go to jail. But deep throats? Not likely. Not now.